Penguin Random House Audio presents Clive Cussler, The Corsican Shadow by Dirk Cussler, read for you by Scott Brick. For Lauren and Bryce, Mes Belles Princesses de Joie. Prologue. Normandy, France, May 12th, 1940. Marcel Demille rubbed his tired eyes for the 100th time. Fatigue draped over him like a heavy cloak as his hands resumed their grip on the thick steering wheel. The moonless black night didn't help his weariness, leading his eyes to transfix on the weak yellow beam of the truck's headlights. He felt like he was driving through an endless amber tunnel. Since early afternoon, Demille had driven the Renault cargo truck toward the port city of Le Havre. He had expected to reach the city hours ago, not anticipating the human tide of refugees in his path. They had clogged the road for most of the journey, men, women, and children. All poor, tired souls, many from Holland and Belgium, fleeing the German blitzkrieg. Well after midnight, the road had finally cleared, as the newly homeless took to the adjacent farm fields for a few hours of sleep. At last, Demille found some speed and the miles soon began to pass. He downshifted as the truck lugged while cresting a small hill, the physical movement of changing gears helping him stay awake. Demille turned to the passenger beside him, and from the corner of the windshield, a blur of color caught his eye. It was a baby carriage rolling across the roadway, its green ruffled top caught in the truck's headlights. Reaction overtook thought as Demille stomped on the heavy truck's brakes, rising off the seat to force his full weight onto the pedal. The younger man, half-dozing beside him, a cap low over his eyes, flew forward against the dashboard. He jerked awake, suppressing the impact with an outstretched arm as an over-and-under shotgun slipped from his knees onto the floorboard. The Renault ACG truck shuddered across the damp asphalt as its wheels locked. Demille had a sudden fear their crated cargo in back might smash through the cabin and crush them. But the truck had not been traveling fast enough to shift the load, and the big vehicle skidded to a stop intact. Just a few centimeters from the front bumper, the baby carriage rolled to its own lazy halt. A wide-eyed young mother in a dust-covered dress ran up and grasped its handle, staring up at the headlights. Demille slumped against the steering wheel, waiting for the pounding in his chest to subside. The woman merely checked the baby in the carriage, then proceeded to the side of the road as if nothing had happened. She pushed the stroller down the hill as two small boys trailed behind her, dragging heavy suitcases through the dirt. "My God," André Caron said from the passenger seat. "They could have all been killed." He regained his seat and placed the shotgun back on his lap. Demille wiped his palms across his pant legs and put the truck back into gear. "It is not their fault," he said, easing onto the accelerator. "Everyone's world has been turned upside down these past few days. No one is thinking straight." The rapid success of the German offensive had caught everyone off guard. Although France had declared war on Germany months ago, after the Nazi invasion of Poland, there had been few actual skirmishes between the two countries. Confidence had been high that France was safe behind the army's Maginot Line and its fortifications that stretched across the border with Germany. The large French army had quickly been mobilized and positioned along the border, ready to repulse any German advance. As months had slipped by, people began calling the apparent stalemate the phony war, and a wary sense of normalcy returned to everyday life. In Paris, Demille had resumed his daily duties at the Musée de l'Armée, where he worked as the chief curator. The museum's most valuable artifacts had already been crated and shipped to the south of France for safekeeping, much as the Louvre had done. Too old for the army, Demille remained in Paris and kept the museum running, aided by André Caron. Like most Parisians, Demille thought the Allies would repel any German offensive. The government, the newspapers, and the man on the cobblestone street were all certain. Time was on the side of France. All that changed on May 9th, when the Germans burst across the borders of Holland, Belgium, and Luxembourg. The French army marched into Belgium to blunt the assault, leaving the rugged Ardennes forest on their right flank sparsely defended. Days later, a surprise assault through the forest by three Panzer tank corps struck like a knife to the heart. Within 2 weeks, the French and Allied forces found themselves bottled up in Belgium, thoroughly routed. The road to Paris was left entirely undefended. As the City of Light approached its darkest hour, its citizens fled. A mass of humanity sought safety in the south of France. With the train system overwhelmed, evacuees clogged the roads from the city, the wealthy in their motor cars, the less affluent in horse-drawn carts. Those less fortunate dragged their belongings behind them. The Parisians joined throngs of Dutch and Belgian civilians who'd already spent days on the road fleeing the invasion. It was called l'Exode, and would include more than 6 million French civilians. Demille had considered boarding up the museum and joining the exodus. Then a letter had arrived, hand-delivered by a young army officer in a crisp blue tunic. Demille had to read the short missive twice, rubbing his finger over the signature of General Maxime Weygand, France's military commander-in-chief. The task seemed impossible, yet here he was, just hours later, driving the back roads of Normandy in the middle of the night, feeling as if he carried on his shoulders the weight of the country. With the approach of dawn, Demille quickened his pace, pushing the truck at top speed through the sleepy farmlands. Soon afterward, he reached the village of Quibouf-sur-Seine, where he woke the local ferry pilot, asleep in the cabin of his vessel, and paid for transit across the Placid River. The port city of Le Havre appeared in the distance a short time later, a plume of dark smoke rising from its center. Demille drove nearly to the city center before turning toward the harbor. The normally bustling commercial center looked like a ghost town. Demille guided the truck west, making his way to the waterfront. Le Havre's port facilities sprawled over several man-made basins, and Demille had to stop for directions to locate the one in the center of the complex, named Vauban. Caron looked over the expansive facilities as they drew near and shook his head. "Where are the ships?" "All of the people we saw on the road from Paris," Demille said. "They have already evacuated. The ships, too." Caron sat upright in his seat, at full attention for the first time since they had left the French capital. "What are we looking for?" "A channel ferry called the Avignon." Sirens sounded nearby, and the black smoke they'd seen earlier now drifted over them from the shifting winds. The day before, German bombers had struck several oil storage tanks north of the port, and they continued to burn. Demille found the quay alongside Vauban Basin and pulled to a stop between two empty berths. The dock was strewn with a jumble of pallets, crates, and travel trunks. Farther down the quay, a handful of small fishing boats were tied to the dock, near bundles of nets and stacks of lobster traps. A stale amalgam of salt water, diesel fuel, and rotting fish filled the air. Absent, however, were any large ships. But that hadn't deterred the mass of waiting refugees. Families, businessmen, and displaced foreigners alike were camped on the wharf, many still asleep under blanket tents, while others brewed coffee on small fires. Some young boys with dirty, sullen faces stared at Demille with idle curiosity. An uneasy feeling of defeat struck the museum curator as he stopped the truck and climbed out. "Stay and watch the truck," he called out to Caron, who had also exited the vehicle and was striding about, stretching his legs. Demille stepped to the edge of the quay, which was restricted by a tall wire fence. He followed the fence to a ramp that passed a small wooden structure. A large red sign on the roof proclaimed Capitainerie. Demille knocked on the door and stepped inside. An overweight man in a dirty striped shirt and suspenders was just entering the office from a rear kitchenette, a demitasse of coffee wedged in his thick fingers.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?